Good morning. The first speaker this morning is Ron Chrisley from the University of Sussex in defense of physicalist accounts of consciousness. Ron.
Thank you, Ted, and thank all of you for coming here this early hour at the end of a long conference, but a fascinating conference, and thanks to the organizers for inviting me to speak today. A question that has been occupying a lot of the attention at this conference and in this field in general is, can we have a science of consciousness? And many of the people who've been considering this question have rightly, I think, focused on understanding better what we mean exactly by consciousness. But I'd like to change the emphasis for this talk in a way similar to maybe how Antti Ravensuo asked that we change the emphasis at least some of the time, and instead look at the question, can we have a science of consciousness from the perspective of what exactly we mean by science? And in particular, I'm going to be asking you to consider, can we have a physicalist science of consciousness with an emphasis on what do we mean by a physicalist science? The idea I'm going to put forward, and the idea I hope you'll remember from this talk, despite any disagreements with details in my talk that you might have, the general claim will be that if we gain a better understanding of what science is, and in particular what physical science is, then we will have a better idea of whether particular scientific accounts of consciousness are possible. And I'm going to attempt to show this by looking at a particular case, or three particular cases. And as I said, even if you disagree with the details in the way I argue for this, at least I hope you can consider this this general idea and see whether you think it's a plausible one. This idea that we might have different answers to the questions we've been asking about the possibility of a science of consciousness if we think harder about what science is. So the way my talk will proceed is that I'm going to look at three influential arguments against the possibility of a physicalist account of consciousness. In particular, I'll be looking at an argument that you can find in Tom Nagel's writing about the incompatibility of the subjective nature of consciousness and the objective nature of scientific inquiry. I'll also be looking at Jackson's famous knowledge argument, the one that features Mary, the neuroscientist who's never seen color before. And then I'll also be looking at one of Dave Chalmers' arguments against the possibility of a physicalist account of consciousness due to a lack of logical supervenience of the conscious on the physical. So that's related to the whole zombie Earth idea. The possibility of zombie Earth, Chalmers says, shows the impossibility of a physicalist account of science. A physicalist account of consciousness. Now I'm going to show, or hope, or argue, that these arguments only work on a particular and implausible view of science, or on particular and implausible views of science. Nagel's argument only works because he sees objectivity, or I'm not saying he sees it, but the argument he presents only works, seems to work, because it assumes that to have an objective account of something is to have the view from nowhere on that domain or on that phenomenon. And I'm going to reject that as a plausible view of what science is trying to do. Jackson's argument only seems to work because it assumes that science is a non-experiential activity and that the information that science traffics in or uses is exclusively non-experiential. And Chalmers' argument only seems to work because of an assumption that explanations take roughly the form of logical deductions, which I think is a mistake as well. I think scientific activity and explanations are much more have much more to do with participating in subject matter in an active way and are not entirely understood in terms of logical relations. So this is just, a lot of this might not make sense at this point, but I'm just trying to give you an idea of where I'm heading in the talk to follow. Now, again, just a reminder of my strategy here. I'm arguing indirectly for the possibility of physicalist accounts of consciousness. That is, I'm only really defending physicalist accounts of consciousness against these three arguments that I'm considering. So by doing that, I'm not providing a direct argument for physicalism at all. In fact, the failure of the three arguments I'm going to look at is completely compatible with the impossibility of physicalist accounts. So it might be that physicalism is impossible, but if it is, a physicalist account of consciousness might be impossible. But if it is impossible, it's not because of the reasons that Jackson, Nagel, and Chalmers have identified. And I'm going to be very quick. This talk is only, this isn't the same length as the other plenary talks you've heard in the conference. It's only going to be about half an hour long, so I'm going to have to be very brisk and leave out the detail of the arguments, hoping that that at least some of you have been exposed to these arguments before. Instead, I just want to give you a general kind of impression that many people in considering the question, can we have a science of consciousness, are really using a model of science when they try to answer that question that isn't accurate, is perhaps outdated. Now, I've been talking about physicalist accounts of consciousness, so let's go through each of those terms really quickly to let you know what I mean when I use these terms. By physicalist, I just mean non-dualistic. So it's actually not a very accurate term for the kind of account of consciousness I'm defending, perhaps. But all I'm trying to say is that I don't think these three arguments show that we have to resort to dualism. I don't think these three arguments show that we have to add something to our scientific ontology in order to explain consciousness. Roughly, I'm trying to say that these three arguments don't show that we have to change our the way we go about trying to understand consciousness. I think, of course, conceptual breakthroughs are needed, new methodological techniques are required in order to understand consciousness, but I don't see any reason why this won't be completely continuous with the approaches we're already using now. By an account of consciousness, notice I haven't really talked about theories of consciousness, and that's going to be part of my take-home message. The idea that a theory is really the be-all and end-all, or is our holy grail, is our quest, I'm not so sure. Theories play a very important role in science and play a very role in understanding a phenomenon, but I'm using the term account because I think theories only play a partial role. You'll see that I'm going to emphasize the fact that actually participating in science and experiencing phenomena while doing science is just as important, or is at least an important part of what it is to have an understanding of something. So the theory is important, but also other aspects of being a scientist or being in a scientific community are also important. So I'm wondering whether there can be a physicalist account of consciousness, or maybe if you could say a physicalist understanding of consciousness. But it will require that such accounts must be scientific in some sense. I'm not just saying any old kind of activity that makes you undergo an aha experience and say, oh, now I understand what consciousness is all about. Not all of those activities will count as accounts, or as they won't be scientific on my view, and therefore won't count as accounts of the sort I'm looking at. And I think this is really where the action is, as I've hinted. I think really what we mean by an account of consciousness or a science of consciousness is really what's important to understand where these three arguments fall down. And consciousness, well, I've explicitly said I don't want to put the emphasis on understanding that term, but I mean roughly what I'm willing to talk about the phenomenon in the same way that the arguments I'm criticizing are doing. That is, I'm interested in the what it's like aspect of consciousness, not the functional aspects of consciousness. I'm willing to meet these three critics on their own terms, as it were. What the aspects of consciousness that Chalmers thinks there's a hard problem for. That's what I mean by consciousness. Okay, so let's go to the first of these three arguments that I'm going to try to refute. There is an argument in the writings of Thomas Nagel that it isn't directly connected with the what it's like to be a bat discussion. It's it does come up there, but it's an argument that goes something like this. I have to be quick, but it's something like this. Consciousness is subjective. That is, conscious phenomena are accessible only from a particular subjective point of view. But on the other hand, scientific accounts are meant to be objective. That is, they're supposed to be from no point of view. They're supposed to be from what you might call a God's eye view. They're not supposed to depend on a particular perspective. They're not these accounts are not supposed to contain any subjectively bound perspectives on the phenomenon. So it looks like we have a direct argument for saying there cannot be a science of consciousness. Science is objective, cannot contain any subjective points of view. Conscious phenomena can only be accessed from subjective points of view. Therefore, one cannot really talk about the subjectivity that we want to in an objective science. Now, I think that this criticism of not only a physicalist science of consciousness, but just about any science of consciousness, I think it fails because of the notion of objectivity that it employs. One could disagree with Nagel by saying, we don't have to have an objective account of consciousness, but I don't do that. I agree that we have to, that science aspires to be objective in some sense, but that's the point of disagreement. I think the view from nowhere view of what objectivity is not helpful. By the way, I'm not attributing these mistakes to Thomas Nagel himself. I'm just talking about an argument that appears in his writing. I think he's very well aware of the problems of the view from nowhere view of what objectivity is. So when we strive for an objective understanding of some phenomenon, including consciousness, we are not striving for a God's eye view. We're not striving for a view from nowhere. We're not striving for a perspectiveless perspective, which is, I think, maybe an incoherent notion. Rather, an objective view isn't itself a single viewpoint. Rather, it is a way of negotiating viewpoints. So we have our own human, limited, perspectival bound views on a subject matter. And if you're able to move from perspective to perspective in the appropriate way, in the right way, in a way that reveals the true objective nature of the phenomenon you're trying to understand, then you are objective. You're having an objective understanding of the phenomenon. So I'm borrowing this idea from writers such as Brian Cantwell Smith, who have used analogies to try to make this point clear. You might notice that think about trying to track an airplane as it moves across the sky. Now, if I point my finger at this airplane, if I remain fixed and rigid, then I will no longer keep this objective relationship between me and the airplane. But as the airplane changes its position, I also have to adjust my position in order to keep a constant link towards the airplane. The analogy is meant to express how, in order for us to maintain some objective link with our subject matter, we will have to adopt different perspectives on that subject matter as the subject matter changes and as we change. But the point is that having an objective understanding of something is not a matter of finally finding one perspective on that subject matter that is itself objective. It's rather a way of negotiating, dancing between multiple perspectives on that subject matter. And each of those perspectives can themselves be very, very subjective and very perspectival. So, on this view, there is no incompatibility between the subjectivity of consciousness and having an objective understanding of it. Because every objective understanding of any subject matter will itself involve many subjective perspectives. There's no impossibility, no way that having an objective account rules out taking subjective viewpoints on the subject matter. Okay, that's a bit quick, but I said these would be brisk. I'm just trying to give you a feel for how, if we rethink what it means for what's for, if we rethink what science is or what it is to have a science of something, we'll see how maybe these arguments don't have the force that we thought they did. So that was meant. That first argument seemed to miss, not be able to tell us the right answer to the question, can there be a science of consciousness, because it assumed a kind of objectivity that really isn't required in order to have a science of something. Now I'll turn to Jackson's knowledge argument. I suppose many of you are familiar with this, but very quickly, Jackson is trying to show that physicalism, a physicalist account of consciousness is impossible by asking you to suppose that there's a scientist, call her Mary, who has all the physical information, all the information that the physical sciences deal with about vision. But this scientist has never actually seen color. Let's say she's lived in a black and white room all her life and has just read lots of neuroscience books has acquired all her information without having seen color. Well then, Jackson asks us to consider the case when she actually does see a color, say red, for the first time. The question he asks us to consider is, does Mary learn something that she didn't know before once she sees this color red? And most people's intuitions are that, well, of course she would learn something. She might have read all that she could about the visual system. She might have all the physical information, all that science has to offer. She's read all the journals. And yet, once she sees red for the first time, she'll go, oh, so that's what red looks like. So Jackson's point is that the conclusion is, therefore, the physical information about consciousness can't be all the information about consciousness, because Mary had all the physical information, and yet she was lacking some other information about consciousness. Namely, she was lacking the knowledge of what it's like to see red. So there's something more than physical information about consciousness. There's something non-physical about consciousness. Well, I think that the mistake here about the nature of science is to assume that science is non-experiential. I think Jackson is assuming that science is a set of propositions that can be written down and read independently of experience. That is, he's thinking of science as a non-experiential, that one can have all the physical information, have all the information that science has to offer, physical science has to offer, without having had any particular experiences of the phenomenon in question. But I contend that science isn't just a set of propositions that can be written down. That, yes, maybe you could read all the books and journals that science 1,000 years from now has to offer, but you still don't have all the information that is involved in science and that the scientific community has by virtue of being experiencing and active agents. True, texts and journals and conceptualized information and propositions play a key role in the success and activity of science, but I'm maintaining so also does experience. Scientists are experiencers. Therefore, science contains, as part of the information it deals in, knowledge of what it's like to see red. Science does not aspire to provide an account of anything to anyone independently of their experience. This is related to the objectivity point I mentioned earlier. The objectivity of science isn't aspiring to a God's eye point of view. It's aspiring to a view from anywhere, an ability to take any number of perspectives on a phenomenon. And that does not mean that you will be able to have an objective scientific account independently of having some experience. In order to have an objective account of a phenomenon, you might have to actually be an experiencer. That's what I'm trying to say. And so now we can go back to Jackson's Mary and see how this applies. Mary may have all the physical information that Jackson is talking about. That is all the information that one could write down in books. But I don't think that means that Mary has all the information that physical science deals with when reasoning about or thinking about or theorizing about color and vision. So the fact that she learns something when she eventually sees red doesn't indicate that there's some limitation on science. Really, Mary doesn't have, despite the first line there, Mary doesn't have, on my account, all the information about all the physical information about color if she hasn't seen red before. I think, in a way, science presupposes that one already has some kind of acquaintance with what is trying to be explained. So In the case of Mary, she actually doesn't she doesn't have any acquaintance with the phenomenon that other scientists are trying to explain when they're trying to explain what it's like to see red. Science doesn't give you that. Science presupposes that you already do have some acquaintance with the problem and tries to answer that problem. So it doesn't attempt to make the phenomenon intelligible for those who don't already have some acquaintance with that phenomenon. So in summary, Jackson's argument begs the question. Jackson asks you to consider an individual who has all the physical information about color and yet who hasn't had an experience of red. And I'm saying, if you haven't had an experience of red, you don't have all the physical information about color, because physical sciences deal with experiences about color. Okay, finally, the third argument. This is Dave Chalmers' argument, looking at the possibility of a zombie Earth and trying to conclude something about that possibility concerning the nature or the possibility of a science of consciousness. He says, scientific explanations must show how the lower-level facts, such as physical facts, logically entail that which is to be explained, such as the higher-level facts about consciousness. He says, we can imagine a zombie Earth, physically identical to this Earth, but and maybe behaviorally equivalent to this Earth, but one in which there isn't any consciousness at all. So this just demonstrates that consciousness is not logically entailed by the physical facts. There's nothing about that physical description that logically entails that there is consciousness present in that world. So, he says, there cannot be a physicalist explanation of consciousness, because he thinks that logical entailment between a lower level and a higher level is required in order for there to be an explanation of the higher level in terms of the lower level. Well, I disagree with this, as you might not be surprised to hear. I reject this rather deductive view of science. Sure, that kind of deductive relation or logical entailment relation certainly helps in certain kinds of reductionist science, but I think it's only one mode of explanation. I think there are other modes of scientific explanation. I think an explanation need only make it intelligible how something with one description also has another description. And that intelligibility relation need not be provided by a logical entailment relation. Rather, I think scientific understanding isn't a deductive activity, isn't a logical activity, but it's a practical activity, and or at least it can be. And scientific understanding may at least sometimes consist in a practical capacity to negotiate between these two different views on the same phenomenon, the physical, neuroscientific, say, view, and the, say, a view that uses more explicitly conscious terms. So being able to look at an MRI scan and understand and just have a practical capacity to know or anticipate what conscious states are realized in someone who has the activity that's detailed in that scan, and vice versa. Someone who, if you have an idea of what conscious state someone's in, if you have a practical capacity to anticipate what physical facts will be true of that person, if you have a very systematic and well worked out ability to move seamlessly between those two levels of description, then I say you have an understanding, even if there is no logical entailment relation between them. Also, our views on what is logically entailed by physics can change. So I believe that our concept of consciousness might have the modal properties that Chalmers indicates at the current moment. That is, it might be true that, at least for some of us, our concept of consciousness is such that a zombie Earth is possible. An Earth in which that's behaviorally identical to this one, but in which there's no consciousness. Maybe that is possible, given our current concept of consciousness. But I think concepts are like objects, other objects. They're abstract objects. And as we know, objects can lose some of their properties, but still be the same object. If I paint this laptop red. It's still the same laptop, it's just changed its properties. Well, I think concepts can change their modal properties and still be the same concept. So therefore, it might be true now, or for some of you, that zombie Earth is possible, but if we do enough science, it might be that you'll still have a concept of consciousness, but it will have changed so that you'll now see, or the concept you're using now will be such that zombie Earth is no longer possible. So an analysis of what I've said goes like this. The three arguments that I've considered rely on inaccurate views of how of what is required by a science. They're not inaccurate in the sense, sure, there are kinds of science in which those three views are correct. But I'm saying there are also kinds of science that we still want to call science that are still respectable and provide the answers to questions that we want and don't make the assumptions that the three arguments we're making. Science isn't a perspectiveless activity. Science is not exhausted by the linguistic information it uses. Science does not explain only by logical deduction. If you see science instead as a situated embodied activity that's carried out by experiencing agents, then you can see why the three arguments aren't as forceful as one might have originally thought. Now, also, I think our content, the content of our science, should inform the method of our science. Cognitive science in general is realizing or coming to the view that cognition, including science, is an embodied situated activity. So if we're saying that in our cognitive science theories, then why not apply that to our own activities as scientists and realize that science itself is a situated embodied activity, experiential activity. One last point I'd like to make is that in a lot of discussions about consciousness, there's an assumption that I think is this is sort of a postscript to my talk because I don't really have a strong argument for this position, but I'd like people to consider this, and I'd like us as a community to think about the following issue, which is the contrast between individualism and maybe some type of all I can say is anti-individualism or maybe a social view of science. That is, critics of scientific accounts of consciousness usually, I say unanimously, but let me say usually assume that it must be an individual who has an understanding of consciousness. But they say that if an individual cannot achieve X, then science cannot achieve X. But I'm asking us to consider the possibility that even if no one individual has an understanding of something, say consciousness, it might be the case that the community as a whole understands that phenomenon, say consciousness. Now, just to conclude, I've only argued that it's possible for a physicalist science to provide accounts of consciousness that elude the three objections that I've considered. But this will be of no use if scientific accounts conform to the limited models of science that Nagel, Jackson, and Chalmers have presupposed. So what I would urge those of you who are scientists in the area of consciousness studies, what I would urge you is to be aware of the wider possibilities when going about your business. Be aware that you don't have to be restricted to a non-experiential science, an exclusively deductive science, a science that's looking for the view from nowhere, but rather it's possible to have an account that incorporates your own experience. It's possible to have an account that tries to negotiate subjective perspectives rather than striving for an objective, perspectiveless perspective. And that's it. Thank you.